Tim Versalotti is director of the Western New England University Poll, professor of political science, and a great one at that. I've known him for years, and I have nothing but admiration for him. He's very smart. Okay, so the question I have for you is, first question, what do Americans think about the Mueller report?
Well, thanks for the kind words there, Alan. In terms of the Mueller report, Americans seem to fall into one of two camps here, that either this report exonerated the president, found no evidence of collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia, or that this was a report, much of which America has not seen yet, that maybe a whitewash when the redacted version comes out, in the sense that the country may not see all of it. Members of Congress, with the exception of a few key committee chairs, may not see all of it because the Justice Department has had a few weeks to go through and redact what they deem to be either classified information or information pertinent to grand jury proceedings, which of course are sealed.
Tim Versalotti, one of my favorite people in the world, at least in the political class, is Representative Richard, we call him Richie, because that's what he wants us to call him, Neil, his work to get the Trump tax returns. What do you make of it?
Oh, this is a fascinating drama that has some potential constitutional implications. So Representative Neil, as chair of the Ways and Means Committee, cited a 1920 law that said Congress is entitled to access to tax returns, and that there can be no debate when a request comes in, that the Internal Revenue Service simply has to turn over the tax returns. Representative Neal gave the IRS a deadline of April 10th to comply with the request. The IRS said it needed more time. That deadline has been extended to next week, to April 23rd. And the implication is, if the IRS does not come through, Congress will then issue a subpoena. And executive side of the exchange, the Secretary of the Treasury, Steve Mnuchin, says this sets a dangerous precedent when Congress can single out an individual and demand their taxes, that this should not occur, and therefore there's going to be a fight. And it'll be an interesting fight at that, to see where this goes, how it plays out.
Especially, Tim, if it gets up to the Supreme Court, and then we'll see whether anybody bothers to go somewhere where their appointing president might not have otherwise gone.
Well, fair point, and also it's useful to keep in mind that the Supreme Court is leery of whittling away at executive privilege, and when these conflicts have occurred in the past, the court has tended to side with the president. There are implications for Massachusetts politics as well, because Richie Neal, comes under criticism sometimes from the more progressive elements in his district, which includes Berkshire County and then Hampden County. Even if this fight takes a long time, even if Congress loses, Neal wins because he says, I upheld my responsibilities as chair of the House Ways and Means Committee, and it is important in his district. Every day on my commute home from work, there I see an electronic billboard along I-91 demanding Richard Neal to get President Trump's tax returns. 70,000 vehicles a day go by that billboard, and Representative Neal has been in politics long enough to know that can matter. And well, so this has all kinds of interesting elements to it.
Well, as I've often said, he is my congressman. I live in the first district, but I think he has handled himself with such aplomb. I mean, you know, some of these people were saying, Richie Neal, you got to sign on. Some self-serving millionaire has been saying, you got to sign on and get him impeached right away. Nonsense. He did it exactly the right way. I suspect people are beginning to have some grudging respect for that.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of impatience as Representative Neal, having taken the chairmanship in January, spent some time laying the groundwork to make this request. And ordinary people like you and I would look at that and say, just write a letter. What are you doing? His argument was, there are legal steps we need to take. There's research we need to do to make sure we're doing this properly. And so now that the request is out there, yes, I think that has tamped down some of the criticism that Neal was taking too long to do this.
Is Mayor Pete Buttigieg too young to be the president of the United States? Put another way, Mr. Pollster, will Americans vote for a gay candidate?
Both are terrific questions. So Buttigieg is 37 years old. The minimum age to serve as president is 35. So he would clearly be the youngest president in history were he to win election. It's hard to tell in terms of whether his surge is real and lasting or whether we're beginning to see a repeat of the dynamic from the 2012 Republican primary, where candidates, and also in a very crowded field taking on an incumbent, were emerging as sort of the flavor of the week, the month, and then they would recede because some criticism would emerge, some story would come up. And so it's hard to tell. It is striking, though, that if you watched his presidential campaign announcement in South Bend, here was a man who brought his husband on stage, who spoke openly about being gay, about living in a country where until recently gays and lesbians could not marry their partners, and to see how far the country has come in that regard is very striking. Now, how far are we willing to go with this? It's hard to tell. He's got a lot of points in his favor in the sense that he's one of the few candidates who's served in the military. He served in Afghanistan and spoke very movingly about that in his announcement speech, arguing that nobody cared about his orientation when he was driving them from point A to point B. They just wanted to make sure he didn't hit any IEDs on the way. He's got executive experience, one of the few candidates in the race that does. On the other hand, you can expect the press corps to begin to dig into his time as mayor of South Bend. That's what happens in this process. It's a vetting process. He's had some conflicts with the black community in South Bend. Black voters are critical to choosing the Democratic nominee and then to supporting the Democratic nominee in the general election. So he's got to do some outreach there in terms of talking about his track record in South Bend and his relationship with the black community there.
We only have a minute and 30 seconds, but I want to ask you real quickly, whatever happened to Elizabeth Warren?
Elizabeth Warren has been struggling with fundraising for very deliberate reasons. She's not doing big fundraisers. She's not calling big money donors. She's still got a decent amount of money because she transferred about 10 or 11 million from her Senate account. She is putting out detailed proposals. She is viewed by the Washington Press Corps as probably one of the most substantive candidates in the race. She just hasn't found the traction yet. But again, if there is this dynamic, this flavor of the week, flavor of the month, her time may come. It's still very early. We haven't had any debates yet. Those start in June. And so just for now, she's the one who's doing her homework, coming to school prepared, and she's just not getting called on yet. But wait and see.
Tim Versalotti is director of the Western New England University Poll, professor of political science extraordinaire, and a friend who has been there for us on the Congressional Corner, and we so appreciate your work. Come back the next time. Let's talk about Joe Biden.
I look forward to it.